So I don't know, guys. Do you feel like Iowa is in free fall? That's two kind of heartbreaking losses in a row. Is there much left to play for at this point? Or, you know, how are you guys feeling here on Monday?
Well, if we're in free fall, then is Illinois rock bottom? And do we bounce?
If we lose to Illinois, but we're not going to lose to Illinois. Nebraska beat them.
Yeah, I can't see that happening.
Well, welcome to 12 Saturdays post-Michigan State. I'm James Bladel. Joining us from the Big Apple is Tori.
Howdy, y'all.
And, of course, holding down the Kinnick West Fortress is Bill Delahunt.
Hey, hey.
Yeah, and we're just, and also the choice of music is just an acknowledgement of some of the tragic news we were hearing today. It's Monday night when we're recording this, and we're just getting caught up on a lot of tragedies today, but Tom Petty just being the latest bit of bad news on this Monday. That started off with a really just bad, just, I was telling you guys, I felt like with Penn State, they were playing very, very well, and I feel like this one, the victories was there so many different times, and Iowa just kept tripping over themselves trying to pick it up.
Are you talking about the Penn State game or the Michigan State game? Because full disclosure here,
this week.
I actually did not see a single second of the game because I was in transit, and I haven't got onto my DVR yet. I'm still here in New York City, and I'm not so sure if I'm going to watch it. Do you guys think I should?
Oh, I wouldn't sit through that again.
Hey, did you like the first quarter of the Penn State game? Because it was like four quarters of that.
No, that was not good.
Okay, so, well, there's your answer. I mean, we can break down, I mean, we could be here all night talking about what went wrong. I think for starters, what was the total rushing yards, Bill? Like, you know, under 30?
I thought I read 19 for the game.
19 rushing yards.
So here's something that's bothered me, and maybe you guys can explain it. I did take a look at the box score, and I saw that the only other running back that got a single touch was Ivory Kelly Martin. He got, I think, one rush for minus 1 yards.
Yeah.
Akram Wadley is an amazing talent. He's fabulous, but he's kind of that shifty, fast, quick strike guy. Why don't we use Torrin Young or any other running back to try to get things going? I can somebody explain that to me?
I was just going to say the same thing, Torrey, is he's so good in space, but running between the tackles again and again and again, you end up with a stat line that's 10 carries for 0 yards, 8 carries for 0 yards in back-to-back weeks. And how little do the coaches trust Torrin Young, who's a bigger guy who might be able to fall forward for a couple, 3 yards in games?
In that North Texas game, I don't know. In that North Texas game, he looked great. I mean, granted, it's against a you know, not as good of an opponent, but, you know, he was getting 3, 4, 5. He looked like a LaShawn Daniels starter kit. And that was what made Wadley so dangerous last year. Daniels would go in there, soften him up, beat him up. And then all of a sudden you got this lightning quick guy to come in. You need a thunder to his lightning. He's not going to be able to be an every down type back in the Big Ten. I'm sorry. He just isn't.
No, they need to find somebody who can do that. Because, you know, Tori, like you've always said, you run those punishing 2 and 3 yard runs up the middle in the first quarter, and they break into 4 or 5, 7 yard runs on the fourth quarter. That's not happening with Wadley. He's just not big enough. He's fast, he's shifty, he's slippery, but he's just not going to punish people. In fact, I think he gets more punished doing that all game long.
I don't think they're being fair to him, to be honest with you. I don't think they're using him to his best abilities.
Right. Yeah, no, so that's brutal to watch. You know, and I think that brings us to what was supposed to be a strength this year. The offensive line in the running game is just, that is just not materialized. And I don't know if it's injuries or if it's just we were sold a bill of goods. I know, Bill, you had some thoughts about, you know, does the Joe Moore Award go to, you know, drinking buddies, or is there actually some merit to this thing? Because that does not look like a Joe Moore offensive line.
No, not at all. And I know Ike Butker's out and a couple guys are out of position, but at the same time, you know, we've got quite a few guys that are juniors and seniors. I mean, does 3 years under Kirk Ferentz still mean anything? I mean, can't we do better than this, what we're seeing right now?
Well, Dockerman had something on Land of 10, just showing just how outnumbered they were. And I thought that was very telling, that they're loading. I mean, they're selling out. I think I saw at one point six guys on the line of scrimmage and two linebackers against, you know, five down linemen. And still we couldn't, we were just running right into the teeth of that. I don't know, I understand the sense of that.
So what was the issue with the passing game? I mean, I know you guys kind of texted me and said, you know, Stanley was not particularly accurate. Did he have time?
Better. Okay, so the pass blocking is better than the run blocking. It's not to say it's great, but it seems to be better. But I don't know that he's real quick with progressions.
I think that might be it. I mean, and one thing I was noticing was when Lewerke from Michigan State had time, he'd throw the ball and, you know, I'd keep getting my hopes up. Please, someone be there to knock that down or intercept it. And he'd throw it to a guy with green grass for 7 yards around him in every direction. And that's one thing that we still don't have at Iowa. I mean, every pass is thrown into a shoebox, and credit to Stanley, he's able to do that sometimes. But I think our passing game isn't doing the offensive line any favors at the moment. Yeah. So that was kind of exposed.
And we kind of knew that, though. I mean, I remember Jim talking about the spring game, wondering if we'd be able to complete a pass all year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's a little sliver of a silver lining. And let me think about this too, though. And you guys, you know, Michigan State had that terrible record last year. I think they were 3-8, 3-9. But they still have a pretty talented team. Did they play pretty well too? Our defense must have been okay to only give up 17 points.
Well, so in my understanding, and I may be off. Bill probably knows better about this. Is that they lost a lot of, I would say, their veterans from that 3-8 team. So they played almost as many underclassmen as we did, if not more. I mean, they had true freshmen on their offensive line. They were having no problems with our defensive line in the running game. But I think part of that was Josie Jewell was just playing out of his mind again. I mean, he was everywhere. He was in the backfield. He was just blowing up plays at the point of attack. So they didn't really have a whole lot going on. They were getting a lot of senseless penalties that was killing their drive. I remember a couple of their drives were looking promising that they got pretty far off schedule due to some penalties. But I feel like it looked like two young teams kind of stumbling all over each other. The difference being that they had a couple of quick scores right out of the gate, and then we shut them down. And then we had a couple of, I think, very just backbreaking turnovers in the red zone. Well, one was in the red zone for sure, like at the 5 yard line, and another one was maybe in the 35-30.
I read on the Stanley fumble, you know, inside the five, that because if you watch the replay, which why would you ever do that again to yourself, when he goes back to throw, he's looking for Vandenberg, who I guess is wide open in the end zone.
Yeah.
So
you know, he was all alone in the end zone. And instead, it goes as a fumble / interception, where somebody catches the fumble before it hits the ground. So however you want to score it.
Right. I guess he didn't get credited with an interception, so still great stat line for all that, all the good that does. I kind of actually want to go back. I meant to get into this, and then I lost my train of thought. As far as the offense is concerned, we had so many audibles in this game, and it was always just stretch play to the right, stretch play to the left. And I know last week, Jim, we kind of talked about this, and you said that Beathard had the freedom to kind of check into different plays. But I'm going back to that Penn State game where we just got smoked last year, and their guys were saying we knew exactly what he was doing when Iowa audibled every time. Is that a problem? Can we not call a pass ever out of an audible?
I think it's illegal in NCAA. I'll have to check your rule book.
Only in Kirk Ferentz land. Here's a question I have, though. Do you guys feel like it might have been a different outcome if it had been played at Kinnick? I'm kind of looking for, you know, the season's clearly not over. I think this kind of more big picture, you know, I've been saying since the beginning this was going to be a rebuilding year and there were going to be bumps along the way. And, you know, having a tough road assignment after a tough game like Penn State at home. I mean, nobody wants to start your conference slate 0-2, but it was always a distinct possibility. I mean, on paper, we were actually, you know, Vegas had us at 0-2 too, based on the odds. So I'm just curious to if you guys who watched the game feel like it might have been a different result if we'd have been at home.
What do you think, Jim?
I have no idea. I'm honest. Because it was so fluky. I mean, how do you... I mean, does Smith fumble on that nice little five-yard wide receiver screen there? It was turnovers. It was a couple of really bad short fields that allowed Michigan State to score. Otherwise, the defense played lights out. I don't know, Tori. I mean... Do they come out on the road? I'm putting myself in Michigan State shoes. Do they come out on the road and drive 70 yards in like six plays and score right out of the gate? They did at home, and that was the difference in the game. So I don't know. Do they do that on the road?
I mean, and I think about, you know, Penn State having the whiteout or something, and, you know, that's just nuts. It's like, how could anybody hear themselves? But I've never heard that East Lansing is a crazy home field advantage. It didn't seem loud from the TV, so.
Yeah, maybe. But I think it's kind of sneaky, Bill. I mean, I've seen good Iowa teams really lay clunkers up in that stadium before, too. I mean, I just sure. feel like Iowa traditionally has struggled to win, struggled more to win at East Lansing than they do in Ann Arbor for some reason. maybe it's because of the way they match up. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's maddening because I think this game, it's just more so than Penn State. You know, if you watch that last play of Penn State, and I think Tom Caker mentioned that Amari Hooker was, what, maybe 3 inches away from knocking that fourth down pass out of the, you know, to getting a finger on it and knocking it off course. This whole game felt like that to me.
Did you say that was their first drive that they just marched down the field and got a touchdown on?
Yeah, opening mm-hmm. possession. Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, maybe that was the hangover, you know? I mean, wow. Maybe, you know, I was worried about the hangover from the Penn State game, and, you know, it sounds like the defense at least kind of snapped out of it. Maybe the offense never did. I don't know.
They came out firing right at O.J. Medea, who was filling in for Manny Rigumba, who I guess I didn't know was hurt in practice before this game. They didn't say anything about it.
We even saw the other guy, Matt Hank.
Hankins,
yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, and again, he's probably going to be fine in 2018 and 2020, you know, but mm-hmm. these guys are just young, you know. And then, yeah, Tori, I mean, they just picked on Ojemudia. The announcers were saying O.J. Medea, which is, but they were just picking on Michael all day, all up and down the field. And then when he wasn't getting burned, he had a pass interference in the end zone. So
I've got my Iowa media guide right here, the 2017 media guide, and it's pronounced O.J. Mudia. Moo is where your accent is. So O.J. Mudia.
O.J. Mudia. All right. So O.J. Mudia. The goofballs on Fox News or Fox Sports were correct. So, and Bill, just before we leave, I know on this week, you know, you certainly have lots of choice opinions to offer about our punting game. Any thoughts there? I mean, especially since the depth chart for Illinois is out and no change at punter.
Oh, you're kidding me. I didn't see that. I don't know. What was more infuriating was that Josh Jackson kept fair catching again and again and again within our own 10-yard line.
He's supposed to do that.
I thought your heels were on the 10, and after that you let it bounce.
And because here's the thing, if the worst case scenario, if you don't fair catch it, is it takes a funny bounce and goes out of bounds at like the 2 or 3 yard line, right? So you've lost 8 to 7 yards. Best case scenario, though, is it goes into the end zone and you start at the 20. So from a risk reward standpoint, it's just stupid to fair catch it there.
Maybe he just doesn't know where he is when he's fair catching the ball.
That has to be, because I'm sure the coaches had to have told him, if you're at the 10 and it's coming at or over your head, let it go.
I don't think anybody's gotten through to him yet. I hope that happens this week. But man, oh man, I don't want to be too mean to Colton Rastetter, but is he the best guy we got on campus? Nobody in Burge can boom a football a little more than 30 yards?
Well, the guy backing him up is a scholarship punter as opposed to the guy who's actually doing the work on the field. So I don't know, man.
Yeah, but his dad is the head of the Board of Regents. Just saying, not saying.
Are you serious?
I did not know that. But
you did not know that? Maybe it's not his dad. It's like an uncle or a grandpa or something. But yeah, Bruce Rastetter is like the chairman, isn't he? He's on the Board of Regents anyway.
This just became like, what is it, Infomax or Infowars or whatever. This just became like a conspiracy site. And that's why it's all connected to the...
We had John Licklider playing basketball for us at one point, too. So, you know.
Yeah, and aren't we getting McCaffrey's kid, too? So...
Oh my God! Please tell me you did not just compare Licklider to McCaffrey's
all
kid,
who's a
5-4-star recruit.
Yeah, and all the Ferentz kids played offensive line under Kirk, right? All the boys did, and
I'm reading the Colton Rastetter entry in the media guide, and it says his parents are Julie and Thor, which Thor Rastetter, that's a cool name. So it must be an uncle, but still.
Dude, I wish he would punt like, you know, a son of Thor. But he does throw a nice 10-yard pass to our newest tight end, AJ Epenesa.
And how about that?
Did we do a fake punt?
We did a fake field goal with the punter as the holder, who stood up and threw a pass to AJ Epenesa after the wide receiver on that end went in motion, so that he became an eligible receiver, and he just ran downfield untouched, and he had to come back on the ball to make the play.
Did we get a first down?
We fumbled within the five. Yeah, we got a first down.
Yeah, it was first and goal. It was first and goal.
Later, we fumbled and lost it.
Yeah, it was first and goal, and then we fumbled on third.
Definitely not watching this game.
Oh, just watch that one play, and you'll be fine for the week. So, but as far as the Gnome of Knowledge, I think currently, at least in the abstract, residing with Tori, now moves over to Bill, who was the only one to correctly predict the Michigan State victory. So, congratulations, Bill.
Thanks a lot.
Enjoy your win, Bill.
I'm not enjoying this win, but I do just kind of want to rub your guys' faces in it, that with a record of 2-2-1, I'm leading the board with the Gnome of Knowledge.
You're in sole possession
too,
of first
because
place.
I actually picked Iowa to lose, because this is how my week always goes. Like, I'm all full of optimism early in the week when we're doing the podcast, and then by the time Tom Cakert sends me an email to ask me what I think is going to happen, like, the doubt and fear has crept in. And I think I actually picked him to lose by 7 points in the lounge prediction contest. So I guess that's some small token of victory for me.
You did that on the free board or whatever, because I was reading it and I wanted to say, what the heck, Tori, you don't want to stick with your guns there? But
yeah, it is kind of weird. You think you get like two picks, one for Tom and one for us, and I just feel like you're saving your garbage picks for the podcast.
But I'm not. The sad thing is I just forget, and then I don't go back and listen, because usually the podcast hasn't been actually, like, you know, published by then, so then I just kind of wing it. But I'm usually, I guess apparently, I just get more pessimistic as the week goes on.
You're like me, Tori. Like, I picked us to go 10-3. And it's just because I had a great summer, found out I have a baby on the way, things are going okay in the career. I really wish I had that pick back. Now I have to stick with it.
You can still get that, man. You just maybe drop one to Ohio State and run the table.
Yeah. We could do it. But okay, we've been kind of doom and gloom and joking, but, you know, we had a little text conversation Saturday night, and, you know, you guys have to keep in mind, we have not dropped a West Division game yet. So we still have, as Iowa fans, everything to look forward to. You know, if Iowa can run the table in the West Division, we're going to be still ahead of where we thought we were going to be this season. I'm not saying it's likely, but it's on the table. I don't want to get too down.
But if we run the table, now, this is what Ferentz was complaining about. If we run the table in the West, that means we are responsible for a loss on Nebraska and Wisconsin, and they play each other. So somebody, the winner of the Nebraska-Wisconsin game, has to lose another game. So really, in the weirdest way, and Bill, cover your ears, we have to cheer for Nebraska this weekend. Because I think Wisconsin has a cake schedule except for us in Nebraska. Their crossovers are like Rutgers and Indiana or something like that. We have to run the table, like you said, Tori, and we have to have Nebraska win this weekend, and we have to have Nebraska lose one more game, which is, I think, is much more likely than Wisconsin losing another
game. I don't think that's true. I think the first, when they decide who goes to Indianapolis, it's the division winner. So if we have beaten Wisconsin and Nebraska, we go.
But we'll have one more loss than them.
Overall, but not in the division. They will have a division loss. We will not have a division loss. Therefore, we're the West Division champions. So I'm almost certain that's how that works.
Go back and check out what Ferentz was saying, because he was describing exactly that scenario, and he said this is something that needs to be fixed, that only divisional records should determine who wins the division.
But yeah, let me put that out there simplified. So we're saying that a 7-2 Iowa team could go to the Big Ten championship game over an 8-1 Wisconsin team by virtue of the fact that Iowa had beaten Wisconsin. That's what we're saying here.
Because they would have a 5-0 division record, right?
I don't think that's how it works.
That's how I thought I read it when I looked at the Big Ten conference website, because it said the first tiebreaker goes to overall record. So it says the two division winners will play in Indianapolis. Right. If there's a tie among the division winners, then you go to overall record. So the way I read that is if you win your division, because Iowa would be essentially, that's how it works in baseball.
Well, but
right?
See, then crossovers don't count at all. That can't be either.
No, they count eventually as tiebreakers, because it's not very often a team's going to, I mean, like last year was another example where I think there were a few teams with the same amount of losses, and then you go to head-to-head. It's like all those things. But I think if you win your division outright without dropping a game, you go to Indy. I might be wrong, but how I thought I read it.
Somebody listening here, correct us. Set us straight. Holler at us at 12 Saturdays on Twitter. That's at 12 Saturdays on Twitter, or let us know on our Facebook, because we could go round and round
obviously,
all night.
We could be doing this for a long time, and nobody's going to like actually go to Google and freaking solve this.
If only there was some way that this knowledge could be imparted.
If only we had the technology to access this, you know, vast global network of.
Well, the thing is, I did look it up. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not that smart, but you know, that's how I read it. But I could be wrong.
All right. Well, I think the next thing we need to do is we need to flush this thing. And I don't know what happened, Bill. We didn't flush it last week, or we didn't flush it. It didn't go down. Do you have a plunger with you? Or
yeah, I'm getting the old plunger out. Yeah, it just kind of spun around. And maybe I closed the lid and walked away.
Maybe we need to get a snake and put some toilet paper over the top of it. Sometimes that helps it, you know. Sink if you've got a floater in there.
Bill dropped a steamer in the the top drawer there.
The upper decker.
Yeah, upper decker.
So hey guys, I'm really excited. I've got a great guest lined up for this week, and I know you always give me a bunch of grief because you know Tori's always getting his journalist guests and Bill's got his former player guest, but I've got a great one. You know, responsible last year for 2 1,000 yards rushers and the Joe Moore Award. I was able to line up the 2017 Iowa rushing game.
Do you got a plan B, Jim?
No, that was it. That was the best I could do. But you know what? Hey,
maybe they'll show up one of these weeks.
I was going to say, we shouldn't feel bad. They stood them up in what, East Lansing too, right? So, but you know, all right, well, we've beaten that horse to death and then we dug it up and beat it some more. But, but you know, since we don't have a guest this week, one of the things I've been wanting to talk about it since before the season started, and Tori, you and I had some text messages about this, is one of the proposed, rule changes coming up involves transfers. And, I, you know, this all started really with Russell Wilson, right? He was the first, I think, big name graduate transfer that moved from, where was he from? North Carolina State to...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Wolfpack.
Yeah, to Wisconsin. Had a great year. I think they won the Big Ten.
And the Rose Bowl. Or they went to the Rose Bowl. I think they lost it.
Leader. How could you possibly forget that 2012 Big Ten championship game where they just jet sweep Nebraska to death?
Oh, I remember.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
I was on a flight to Brussels, and when I landed, I checked the score, and I actually thought it was like a misprint. It was so bad. It was like 60-some to... Yeah, it was... but, you know, he kind of opened the floodgates, and for the most part, look, this is a Ferentz team, so obviously when we go out, who's our first graduate transfer? A punter, right? But
punting is winning. Punting. We could use one right now.
We could definitely use him back this year. But and then of course we're beneficiaries of it with James Butler. I mean, we forget he's sidelined for a couple more weeks here. But
I think we're missing him more than we think. Yeah. He would have been a nice. We were talking about the Thunder Lightning thing, and we're missing our Thunder.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but now the proposed change is that transfers can play immediately without taking that year off. I'm not sure of the exact rules that are under consideration, but the idea that somebody could leave a Power 5 school and go to another Power 5 school and play right away. And I think, as I was telling you guys, I think this opens up a whole new dimension in recruiting. You've got somebody like, let's pick on our quarterback situation. You got somebody like Tyler Wiegers, who, Tori, you mentioned, is a four-star recruit, who's backup to somebody younger than him. Now, why wouldn't somebody like that, under this new transfer rule, just like start shopping around and become like college football's effective free agency, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what it ends up being. It ends up being like a free agent market, and I fall on the side of, I'm one of the guys that thinks players probably should actually be being paid. So, I mean, I get the rule was put in place because you're basically supposed to be, discouraging people from, jumping schools at the first sign of trouble or problems. But, coaches get to leave whenever they want, as soon as they want, without sitting out. Why shouldn't it be that way for players as well?
I think that's a great point, Tori. I think the whole thing just sounds a little bit gross, though. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm a fan of thinking of these guys as student athletes. Remember the commercials from a couple of years ago, like the Big Ten or whatever. All our players are majoring in something, or I don't know, something along those lines. But it was driving home the point that only so many would go pro, and they're here to go to school. And I don't like that. I mean, what happened to just not being the guy and being a good teammate?
Yeah. Well, Bill, I think that's a good point. But, I mean, let me just be even a little more cynical than that. Could Iowa benefit from this? I mean, as a mid-level...
Well, really, that's what it comes down to for us, right?
I mean, well, look, we always complain, some of these two schools, let's pick on Alabama, right? They always load up. Somehow, they have 4- and 5-star players that just walk on to Alabama. Whereas we have to struggle and fight to get 3 stars, right? And you fast forward that a couple of years, what is the number one deciding factor for a player? It's not, cold versus hot or whatever. I mean, more than anything, they want to play. They want to see the field. So, I mean, if you've got a 4-star, sophomore or junior in Alabama, and oh, by the way, Alabama just got a whole new freshman class of people better than you, why not come to Iowa? Why not come to Wisconsin? Why not come to Purdue? If the offer's there and your grades are supporting it, I mean, I feel like this is interesting. I mean, I understand that Ferentz is probably, against it, because I think, it doesn't lock down the people that he thinks he has. But I think you could see the opportunity in this as well, is that it kind of puts everybody else's roster up for grabs.
How do you think Iowa would have looked with that David Johnson kid from Northern Iowa, who's now, tearing up the NFL for the Cardinals? they didn't take him out of Clinton because of grade issues and stuff. How about David Johnson and I don't know who would have been the other running back back then.
So Mark Wiseman, 60% of the carries. David Johnson, 40% of the carries. I like that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, jokingly, you know, MAC schools have to be quaking at the notion of Iowa poaching their, you know, wide receivers.
Now, careful. Statements like that got Bill kicked off of Hawk Airport. I think he got the band.
This is our podcast. I can say whatever the hell I want.
Well, we can kick him off.
Much love our to the Ball State offers.
But is Toledo calling? You know, we need to know. So, yeah, it's. I just feel like, you know, this is another step away from, you know, everything that we've always kind of appreciated about the culture of college football. You know, we have that friend from the UK that comes to these games, Tori, that. He's always, you know, we're explaining how, you know, you get these guys for 3 or 4 years. They're maybe good for one or two, and then you gotta replace them. Everybody does, and that's the great leveling, you know, the great equalizer. But you know, if everybody's roster is up to, you know, up for grabs, then it doesn't matter that somebody like Alabama or Ohio State is hoarding these 4-star recruits if they're not seeing the field, you know. Maybe the grass is greener in some place like Iowa City.
You know what it really does, though, is it really creates a second layer of recruiting, though, because mm-hmm. now you almost have to. I mean, they're already looking at JUCO guys, and I'm sure, you know, there's some poking around the transfer market, but this is going to create kind of a secondary recruiting situation where you're going to be actively looking at players on other teams and along the JUCO ranks. And, you know, I don't know that. I think Iowa's recruiting is solid, but I don't know that it's the strength of, you know, we're a developmental program.
But
so
maybe you could leapfrog and get into that aftermarket
maybe.
You know. Now, what kind of rules would you want to see around this? And I'm thinking Bill especially. I mean, like, you know, is it similar to basketball where the coach could maybe veto a transfer if it's against a rival or an in-state or an in-conference opponent? Or, I mean, maybe we could go poach the Pac-10 or Pac-12. Sorry, look how old I am. You know, Pac-12, but not, you know, Ohio State. Or what do you think the rules should be?
Gee, I don't know. I mean, I'm just only wrapping my head around how this could benefit Iowa. I'm not even to that point yet. But yeah, you'd have to think there'd be something like that, and it just gets into this really gross territory of the reason why I don't like pro sports. I mean. I was telling one of the guys that I coach, because he asked me what my favorite NFL team was, and I told him that I like college because those guys came to Iowa City mm-hmm. and walked through the same buildings that I did and had the same teachers that I did, and they were like, you know, this is a cool place. I want to be here. Now you're talking, you know, where can I go for a year to get some playing time and maybe transfer again? I don't know. It doesn't sound fun anymore, I guess.
It is the reality, though. I mean, and to your point, Jim, I almost think if you do go down that road, I mean, outside of maybe having some rules about tampering, like you can't be calling people during the season like, hey, I noticed you're not playing very much. We need a receiver. I think that would have to be strong. But
right.
Other than that, though, I don't really like the idea of the restrictions and things like that. I mean, look at all the BS we had to deal with when Wisconsin was trying to block why am I drawing a blank on his name? The kid from Cedar Rapids from transferring down to play, mm-hmm. You know, Jared Utoff.
Yeah.
It's like that seems silly and petty to me. So I'm not in a favor of that. I like the idea of the no tampering rule, though.
Yeah, that's a rule. Let's say, you know, you can only do it between, you know, April and June, you know, or something like that. You've got to have your transfers in place by, you know, by the start of camp, something like that. And every player can only do it once, obviously. I mean, you don't want somebody hopping around. I don't know. I feel like this is a net benefit to mid-level schools like Iowa. I think to your point, Bill, it turns like the MAC and maybe schools like Iowa State into like a farm team sort of thing, where you can poach. I mean, you can't poach their star players, but if they've got like a
Iowa diamond State's in the rough, always been a farm team.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, but you know, Tori, they've always had. We've said this before. Is how come we play these teams that are terrible, but always seem to have like a star wide receiver, and we have none. You know, I don't know. I feel like there's a way to win this game, and that there's a new game that's going to be starting here, beginning in the next off season. So.
Well, I don't disagree with that. This will be my last point on it. But I think as much as I love our coach, he never strikes me as the one to like find the angles and find the way to get the sneaky way to get a leg up on your opponent. I mean, he is as old school and honorable and by the book. He's the Ned Stark of college football. Okay,
I don't want to be mean to Kirk Ferentz, but Kirk Ferentz would screw this up totally. and I guess. I don't know. Now I'm starting to kind of think, like, you know, after the concussion stuff blows over and, you know, the sports changed incredibly. And after Jim Delaney has been crushed to death under the weight of all his money that he keeps stored up, like Scrooge McDuck, maybe 30 years from now, 40 years from now, you know, a couple of the PE teachers at Iowa will call the PE teachers at Illinois and say, hey, let's have a football game with students at Iowa versus students at Illinois at Hubbard Park, and college football will start again, and it'll be not filthy.
Oh, Bill, you're such a
that will happen. Yeah, after
such a dreamer.
After Delaney drowns in a vault swimming accident.
Exactly.
I love that.
Crushed
image.
By gold bullion.
Well, it change is coming one way or another, and I think that. We can all look back at the grad transfer rules, which was meant to benefit students, but I think was meant to benefit them academically. But of course, we were able to, you know, pervert that into more football and getting these guys a extra year. And, you know,
well, speaking of Illinois, should we turn our sights to our foe from the east, who used to be a big thorn in our side, but anymore has become kind of a speed bump on the road to glory.
Well, let's definitely set our sights on the least politically correct member of the Big Ten over there in Champaign, and I don't know what to think of them. I'm just going to say this. I think they have a bad team this year.
And well, I actually watched that whole game. That was really the only college football game I watched this week. Well, I guess I watched a Thursday night game too, but I did watch most of the Illinois-Nebraska game, kind of hoping that somehow Nebraska would stub their toe in Champaign. But, both teams just looked really bad. Illinois just looked worse. And the thing that where I think this is gonna makes our offense come back to life a little. They have a ton of kids, like freshmen and not experienced players, on their defensive, their whole defense, but especially their defensive line. If we can't put up a big running numbers against Illinois, then we actually are like bad at offense. So that'll be interesting to me. I suspect we're gonna be able to run all over them.
I'm right there with you, Tori. They are a glorified high school team. And as of right now, the spread is Iowa by 18. 18. I'm saying, you know, put every penny you have on Iowa to cover that. 11 a.m., Big Ten channel. Nobody outside of the state of Iowa and Illinois is going to be watching that game.
The state of Iowa, actually.
Right, yeah. No performance season, anxiety, yeah. Nothing. This is when Kirk Ferentz teams shine. We're going to blow their doors off. 38-10. I'll be surprised if it's closer than that.
Oh, you're picking already? I didn't know we were to that point of the show.
Oh, sorry if I jumped the gun on that.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about, I mean, because I think you have to look really hard to find coaches, or at least in the beginning of the season, we really didn't have a Big Ten coach that was on the hot seat. I think you definitely have to look at Nebraska right now. And where's Lovie Smith on that? I mean, the seat's getting warm, right?
That was just such a weird hire to begin with. Like, because I'm unfortunately a Bears fan, which is a frickin' talk about a franchise with a ton of problems. And I mean, he was bad for them and he's bad for Illinois. And he's just, he's not a college type coach. I mean, he just, he can't recruit. I mean, I don't get what Illinois is trying to do with football. I mean, it's a decent school. It's in the Big Ten. I mean, nobody's going to like fall in love with Champaign by any means. You know, it's not a, the world's greatest college town, but they shouldn't be as abjectly terrible as they are.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of weird because I think Tori, you and I, maybe Bill, maybe is a little too on the young side, but you and I remember when Illinois was good. And you know, consistently
at least competitive.
Good. Well, they were consistently good. They could they went from being a rival to being a spoiler to being a doormat. And then I think they did go to the Rose Bowl. And did they win it recently, like in 07?
No, they didn't win it. But, hey, Bill went down to the game with Rochelle and I in Champaign last year. And, I mean, Bill, tell that was your first experience there. It's like a night and day difference in atmosphere. I mean, have you ever experienced a deader, lamer Big Ten game day atmosphere than we saw in Champaign?
No, not at all. I mean, Purdue is more going on than Illinois is. It's just, you know, flat with the windiest stadium I've ever been to. Strip malls. I guess go to Chili's if you're looking for some fun in that town. I didn't understand why anybody would go to the University of Illinois.
Well, you're not too far from Indianapolis, so there's that. I mean, if you're looking for a day trip.
Yeah, well, you're never going to go there for a Big Ten championship game, so.
So, Bill, you're feeling really good about Iowa covering the spread. And did you say 38 to 10?
38 to 10, yeah. I mean, what they scored 6 on Nebraska, who's still trying to figure out their defense. Maybe some of our backups will give that up. I don't know. I'm just sensing, you know, after the last 2 weeks, we get our heads right, go into the bye, 1-2. We're now fourth or so in the Big Ten West, and we'll see what happens after. But I think this is the game that we get right.
Well, Illinois is definitely the cure for what ails you. If you've got to work out some things, Illinois plus a bye week is like having 2 weeks off in a row. Tori, what do you got as far as a prediction?
Yeah, I'm right there with Bill. I mean, I feel like, you know, I think Iowa's got kicked and are a little down. I think they might start a little slow again. I am worried about the offense, especially that running game. But I do think they're going to get things going. I'm going to say something along the lines. I'm actually going to be even a little more optimistic on the defense, because I think that's kind of lost in the disappointment of the last 2 weeks, is the defense has held up really well. I think it's going to be something more along the lines of 28-3 is what I'm going to go with.
Oh, that's pretty impressive. So yeah, I think like I said, playing Illinois and then a bye week is really good, and the good news out of the last 2 weeks when you're scraping for silver linings is that I haven't really been hit by the injury bug. Relatively healthy. I'm probably a little less optimistic, I guess, than both of you. I'm going to go 35-13 Iowa. And I just because I believe Illinois either gets a quick early score, or we give up, the backups give up a score late, you know, maybe one of each. But I feel like they're just not as disciplined on defense, and either we get the running game going or Stanley just kind of finds his groove and gets going. I guess the only concern I would have is coming out a little flat, or even if it's something weird like the weather. You know, we're getting to that time of year where we can start to see the wind pick up for those morning games. So, but I'm going to say 35-13, I think I'll go with. Now, you guys didn't pick the click, so I'm going to say, for me, I'm going to say Nick Easley. And I know I keep picking him, but you know what? It's more often than not, it looks like a good pick.
I was going to say, is it okay for me to pick Akron Wadley now that he's not, like, awesome anymore?
No. Can't. It was your rule.
can't, like, I know it's my rule, but I feel like he's finally going to have some room to run. I feel like he's going to go crazy this game.
Well, you can't, like, make a rule and then, like, make us all, you know, enforce your rule and then break your rule. What is that?
Fine, fine. I will go with Manny Rigumba coming back from injury then.
You know he's not starting.
He's not? He's not coming back? What's wrong with him?
He's hurt or something. Pick again.
No, then? Fine. You know what? I'll go with Noah Fant. I think we can start throwing the ball to that guy. I mean, I like him.
Yeah, it's a total mismatch for Illinois, too.
But secretly, it's Akron Wadley.
All right, well, you guys are going to like my pick. Check this out. Ivory Kelly Martin. He's getting more carries at home. Spelling Akram Wadley. I don't know why we don't run Torin Young, so logical pick, Ivory Kelly Martin. Watch out.
I like him.
I could see that. I could see that.
You know, the other thing that we should have picked was Smith Marset for a receiver. But here's one that we won't pick is Brandon Smith. Because, I don't know, I feel like he's going to be in the doghouse for probably the rest of the season.
Brandon, we hardly knew ye.
I know, he looked so promising. He's the guy they made a big point on the broadcast, Tori, about saying his hands were so big that he wears triple XL gloves. And then his only touch of the game, he fumbles.
Ouch, that really hurts. So here's a question I'd like to pose to you guys. What do you think the crowd's going to be like? Do you think this team is going to still get people excited? I mean, I think people are still pretty stoked after the Penn State battle, but you think people are going to be down on
11 o'clock game versus Illinois? I don't know. What do you think, Bill?
I'm not making the trip. I'll watch. Tori, are you going to watch a game this week?
I will be there. We're tailgating this time. I've got friends coming up. Yeah, no, I'm jonesing for some Iowa football.
Well, there you go.
And I'll be
I'm
there.
I'm still super stoked because I've missed the last two. I mean, maybe they just need me to be physically watching them to win. Maybe I'm the key to the whole thing.
I'm going to be so mad at you if after the season
we run the table.
You've watched every game. Yeah, we've run the table.
Well,
you won't be mad. You'll be happy as hell.
We'll be happy, but then we'll have like some really strict rules for you next season and bowl games.
Tori's not allowed to travel.
He's not allowed to do anything. Your job is to watch football. Check like a prison sentence with the TVs. We'll get those
clockwork. Don't tell my wife that I'd be totally down with that.
We'll get those clockwork orange things to prop your eyelids up so we can force you to watch football. So, well, once again, you know, on a long enough timeline, this podcast delves off into the deep end of absurdity and pop culture and whatever. So I think we've got our picks. I hope we can bounce back, and then we've got our week off, which is also kind of nice because I'll be traveling, so that'll make
so are we gonna skip the pod next week, or are we gonna do some kind of weird off topic thing? Maybe, you know, Bill and I can do like a politics roundtable.
Oh yeah, that's exactly what our audience wants. But we will be there. We'll be there on Saturday, and let's hope that we can work out some of the kinks in this running game and get Iowa back on the winning track.
Yeah, we've got Jeff George Jr. is going to be starting for Illinois. I just read that.
Who?
And Jeff George Jr. is Illinois' quarterback this week. They benched Chase Crouch.
Why do I know that Jeff George? Was he an Illinois quarterback in the day?
Yeah, and the Indianapolis Colts. So he was like the first like $10 million arm, 10-cent brain dude in the NFL. Sweet mullet.
We're going to have to avenge the 1989 loss at home to Illinois. They beat us 31-7 when they were ranked number 8, and Jeff George was the quarterback. So
we avenged that loss the next year in Champaign. I was there. I kissed Gergen. We secured the Rose Bowl.
Blew him out 54-28 in the Nick Bell game, but
Nick Bell had like 230 yards rushing in like the first 7 carries or something like that. I mean, I might have slightly exaggerated, but it felt like that.
Does Nick Bell have any eligibility left?
Yeah, we could use that guy.
He'd be a D tackle or Ferentz.
I would say, you know, in any situation, you can always just like bring out the, you know, I don't care what age he is, just throw Cedric Shaw back there and, you know, shave his head and everybody will think he's 21 years old again and he'll just start chewing up these defenses. So, yeah. All right, guys. Well, you know, it'll be interesting to see if anyone's still listening to these podcasts, because I think enthusiasm starts to taper off when Iowa starts to lose, and then it starts to pick up again weirdly when we lose.
Yeah, no, we either have to be awful or awesome. So hopefully, we'll get back to awesome.
Yeah. All right. So with that, I'll see you Saturday, Tori. Bill, I got an extra ticket if you want to make the drive. It's up to you, man. Just hit me up. But otherwise, we'll say on Iowa.
Go Hawks.
Beat Nebraska.
but win Nebraska this weekend.
I can't do it. I'm not
cheering till I'm not cheering for those sons of bitches until I know what the actual rules are.
Well, Google it. That's your homework. All right, everybody.
I did Google it.
All right, everybody, signing off. Go Hawks.
Good night.